It would have been tougher to write about it in the 90s, although it might have been more popular.
The last time we spoke, you were like, grunge wasn't even a thing.
At the time, nobody liked the term grunge.
How could you say no to Gene Simmons?
I wouldn't have said no to Gene Simmons. If he made a request of me, that'd be different, but the request was of the band.
When did you realize, oh my gosh, like, this is good?
I mean, instantly. That first day, we wrote 3 songs. I mean, we were just looking at each other and smiling and dumbfounded, like, how did that happen?
After Chris passed, you're having issues getting the rights. You got the rights. So tell us about the new music.
This material has been in existence for over 10 years in some cases. It's important for the legacy of Soundgarden. It's important for the legacy of Chris Cornell. Hi, I'm Kim Thile of Soundgarden, and you're in studio with Joanne Butler.
Kim Thile, in the house.
I haven't seen a copy yet. Let me see that. Oh, cool.
It's I have to tell book. You, I'm really enjoying this. It's really good. Congratulations. Really well done.
I believe it reads quickly like a Kurt Vonnegut book. I thank Adam Tepetlin for that. He has an experienced sense of pacing, you know.
Yes. So what made you do it? Why now?
It was actually proposed to me by Adam Tepetlin, you know, like probably back in 2019. And we had some mutual friends and he came to me with the idea of doing a book. I kind of hesitated a little bit. You know, there were a number of other things going on. I was somewhat busy. And then the pandemic hit, which both afforded us some more time, but also impeded our ability to get together. For one, he's based out of Victoria, in British Columbia. And I don't recall how far into the pandemic this occurred, but they eventually shut down the border. So my interest was in getting together with him over a few beers at a pub or a tavern, have dinner and stuff. He had previously written, one of his first books was on extreme beers, you know, odd beers, and he kind of paired it thematically with heavy metal culture. And so I thought, well, let's get together and drink a few beers. And when the pandemic shut everything down, we thought, well, we could do it by phone. And I thought, well, then it'd just be, I've done decades worth of phoners, and I thought that wouldn't be satisfying. And we thought we could do it by Zoom, and I had no idea what that was until the pandemic proceeded, and I became obligated to extended family get-togethers via Zoom, and then eventually business meetings with attorneys and accountants. So I got a little bit more accustomed to it. See, here I am. It worked.
Let's talk about it. Let's talk about you. Why did you feel compelled to tell your story?
Partly Adam talked me into it. You know, I talked to a few other friends and I thought, oh yeah, you know, there were certainly things to cover. We're far enough away from the initial impact of Seattle and the Seattle milieu, and there'd been enough transition. Bands had broken up and come and gone, and people got married and had kids, et cetera. It seemed like, well, we could talk about it now. We probably have a different perspective and be able to reflect on the scene, our friends, mm-hmm. our colleagues, mm-hmm. where we were, where we are now. It would have been tougher to write about it in the 90s, although it might have been more popular, but we were still either ascending or moving sideways or whatever. But mm-hmm. I think things had calmed down enough, especially during the pandemic. I thought, well, you know, there's certainly a volume of anecdotes and references and reflections that we can now address.
Yeah. One of the things you said, I found it interesting because the last time we spoke, you were like, grunge wasn't even a thing. I don't even know. But now here you say, you know, before grunge. So that's one of the things that you look at.
At the time, nobody liked the term grunge. I think everyone just kind of saw themselves as, we kind of came out of the sort of the punk rock, art rock sort of scene, underground, indie underground, but it was definitely post-punk. So I just don't think we had a clear reference or label. And grunge is hooky. It's one syllable. It's kind of got the, you know, it's alliterative with punk to some degree.
So now you appreciate it now.
it allowed for retail to file things and also for magazines. It probably helped editors like understand, you know, what the story is and how it, you know, how it fits with things. It's just an easy way to package it and sell it. It's a little ribbon, but none of us liked it. Here's why we now use a reference because no one expected, of course, Nirvana to go through the roof, followed by Pearl Jam, and then subsequently, Alice in Chains and us, Smashing Pumpkins, even the presidents of the United States. There's so many things happening that we were dedicated to the investment in time and in our career, because as more demands fell upon us, traveling, touring, work, interviews, TV, radio. So what was just that weird little beer-fueled hobby to aunts and uncles, bosses and coworkers, now became that thing that those guys are doing. That's their career. We saw them on TV, we heard them on the radio. So other questions come up in conversations. Usually my family or friend's family or girlfriend's dad wouldn't really bother with your rock and roll hobby that you have. That now people are curious. I've seen you before, or I think, do you play in a band? Yes. What is the name of your band? And of course, everyone knew Nirvana and Pearl Jam. They might have at the time, at a certain time, early in the 90s, people were less familiar with, the bands that hadn't become as huge or ubiquitous and household names like Nirvana and Pearl Jam were. So we would just say, grunge. So have you heard of Nirvana? Have you heard of Pearl Jam? So grunge was a term that was adopted more by the mainstream that allowed us to connect with older people and maybe people who are less involved with the music business to let them know what you do and where you do it and with who.
Yep. What about your early starts? So Hero kind of got you in, but you were not so sure about it. You were like, "Nah, who is this guy, Chris with the short hair?" Like, and then you were
Well,
like, "Wow."
I'd met Chris, and I'd played in a couple shows in a band with Chris. It was a band that Chris actually had started with one of my other roommates, and with Hero. Heroes actually went on the record on some video telling that origin story, and it's all inside out and sideways. I watched it. I thought, there's demonstrable evidence that what you're saying is did not occur or could not have occurred. One of them is a photo of Hero and Chris and my two roommates, Matt and Dean, together in the band. One of my roommates was the founder of this band called the Shemps. He was a guitarist, a very good guitarist. I mean, I learned stuff from him in high school. He was like the hot shot. And my other roommate was a drummer. They auditioned Chris to sing, although Hero reports in a few interviews that they had auditioned Chris to drum. No, we had a they had a drummer. And by the way, this was Hero's band. It wasn't my band. It was Hero, this drummer, this guitarist, and then they auditioned Chris to sing. And then they did a bunch of press photos, and then Hero quit. And they had a bunch of gigs lined up. And my roommate said, "Can you play bass? We can borrow a bass. Can you learn these parts? Because we have these gigs coming up." And I did. I played about five gigs of them, two of them with Chris singing, a couple he was underage, and a couple of them were at bars. I think he needed to get a permit or whatever. I think we had a keyboardist in the band at some point, and he sang. And then I think Chris, Hero's roommate, who was a drummer in Hero's previous band, moved out of that house. And so Hero had space available, and Chris was a drummer looking for a place to live and put his drums, but now he wasn't drumming in this band. It was his opportunity to try singing in this band, the Shemps. But he was looking for a place where he could bang on his drums and not disturb the neighbors. And Hero had that place, and a drummer had just vacated. So that's how that happened. So they were jamming together as a rhythm section. They were looking for lead instruments to perform with them. They jammed with mostly guitarists, but I think a few keyboardists. And yes, Hero tried to get me into jam. I was going to college. I was at the University of Washington. I had a couple more quarters to finish up. I just started this amazing relationship that would end up lasting for 10 years. And I was working at the United Indians of All Tribes Foundation at the Daybreak Star Cultural Arts Building in Discovery Park in Magnolia. All these things took up a lot of time. Plus, I was DJing like once a week, or had been DJing at the university's radio station, KCMU, which became KEXP. So that's why I declined. I just didn't have available time. And weekends were made for my, were set aside for my new girlfriend, going to movies, going to dinner. I had work during the main part of the week and classes. So we agreed that I'd come by on Mondays or Tuesdays. So he pushed me to come jam with them on Monday. It went great. Said, can you come back the next day? I'm not working the next day. Yes, I'll come back. We enjoyed it. It was amazing. And subsequent Mondays and Tuesdays, we did as well. And that became the thing.
Thank
But
God it became the thing. But what was it like? When did you realize, oh my gosh, this is good. Like it's working. We sound good.
I mean, instantly. I mean, I just thought, seriously, I thought I was just going to humor hero, jam for a bit, have some beer. I didn't know Chris was a drummer. I was only aware of him singing in this band that did Doors and Stones covers. My focus at that time wasn't being in a band. I was totally filled up, full-time job, full-time school, relationship,
Wow.
DJing on the side. So that's what was amazing about it, is that I was not prepared and barely interested. I just thought, oh, this would be something social to do, just do some
Yeah.
music and drink some beer. And that first day, we wrote three songs. I mean, we were all so excited about them. I mean, we were just looking at each other and smiling and dumbfounded, like, how did that happen? We all immediately thought, this is cooler than any band we've ever been in before. And Chris felt that way, Hero felt that way, I felt that way. It was original music we were coming up with. It didn't really sound like anything else. You can kind of reference things like Bauhaus or Killing Joke or maybe Susie and the Banshees or something, but a little bit heavier and a little bit. It was interesting, and it was more than interesting. I mean, we were all kind of slack-jawed, smiling like, did that just happen? The Hero would say, hey, I got this other riff. Do you guys want to jam on that? Sure. And bam, 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 all of a sudden we have another song. We decided to just document them. We just had a cheap little four-track reel-to-reel recorder that Chris and Hero knew how to operate. And let's record that so we don't forget it. The next day we come back and listen to it, and we're still enthused by it. It's like, oh my God, we did that.
Oh my
We
God.
jam some more, we write two more songs. So just like that, in two sessions, maybe they were 3 or 4 hour sessions each. We've written five songs and we've impressed each other and ourselves. And that was that. It just became so exciting. And then I couldn't come back and jam for a while, for a few weeks, because I had other things to do. And Hero kept calling, saying, you liked what we did, didn't you? Yes, I loved what we did. Well, why don't you come back and jam? I'm just busy right now. We'll eventually. It was when he was just really pushy, like he was my lead in some factory or something. I don't know, man. And I think the next a week or two later, or the subsequent week, maybe 2 weeks later, he was getting kind of antsy and saying, "Look, dude, do you want to do this or not?" I go, "Yeah, I just don't know where to find the time." He goes, "Just come by tomorrow. Let's just try it again, okay? Let's just all right." All right, he talked me into it. I had to move a bunch of stuff aside, go back there, jam, write another song. So, next thing you know, I'm sitting in philosophy of art class, just doodling in my notebook and writing lists of our
Oh my gosh.
possible titles for the songs we worked on.
And then has Matt come in yet?
No, Matt didn't
Okay.
come in for another 3 years, I think. Remember, we had a drummer. His name is Chris.
Right. So
Well,
why did you realize he was a better singer than a drummer? Like, how did that come? How did that happen?
that took a while. Chris was a perfectly adequate singer. I mean, he had no problem. I've said this in a few interviews, and we just thought that Chris's singing style was more, a bit conventional, because our experience was with Chris singing Doors and Stone songs. I mean, you bar rock. I mean, every city has that area, or had, at least in the 70s and 80s and 90s. They all had that area of town where the tourists go, and there's bars, and it's kind of blues based and boogie based and classic rock based, mostly 60s and 70s stuff. Every city has that district or two, and Seattle was not, it was not unlike the rest of the country or Canada or Europe in that regard. So if Chris is singing something that, if his singing style is somewhat commonplace, maybe even pedestrian from our perspective, playing in this cover band, then that is not going to be the focus or standout, quality about his performance. What we liked was the way he played drums with Hero and the way they wrote. I mean, Chris would have ideas for arrangements, and then he'd go down to his room and say, "You know what? I've got some lyrics that might fit that." And he would. He'd keep a little notebook full of lyrics, and he'd try the lyrics to see if they fit with the meter and tempo of the song. And he'd kind of play drums and sing at the same time, which is a difficult thing to do. Eventually, at some point, we had to decide, well, he'll sing better if he doesn't have his four limbs committed to a drum kit. But we really like Chris as our drummer. We like the way he plays. We like the way he writes, the dynamic. He has an idea of the songs instrumentally. So what do we do here? Well, we can keep writing. He can keep writing lyrics, and we'll find someone else to sing. Someone who maybe stylistically, someone who had a broader palette than simply a beer bar, on the weekend. That's what we were thinking. But really, when Chris was freed up from the drums, he pretty much left a few anchors or weights aside that liberated him, not just in terms of his stage presence, but in terms of his ability to sing, what he could sing. He wasn't weighed down by his duties as a drummer. And so what we saw then was that his vocal range and abilities were greater than what he was doing in a limited capacity by trying to do both. And
Amazing.
then as the songs grew, his style changed and grew to accommodate the themes of the songs and the musical style. So,
You know what I found? Synesthesia. That was neat. I found that interesting. When you guys are creating, you said, like I might object to one part that someone was proposing. I might object because purple clashed with other parts.
oh,
I
but
thought this
I didn't
song is
know
a
that.
yellow triangle, and you're presenting me with a purple circle.
Yeah,
It's hysterical.
that was a humorous reference. I did not know what synesthesia. I do have synesthesia, but I didn't know
You
that in the
know it.
80s. I don't think I learned what the term was until late 90s or early 2000s. I had described this aspect of the way I would perceive things, in terms of colors and in some cases shapes, with words and numbers and with numerals, letters. And I wasn't aware that there was a term for that or a word for that. And usually when I shared that with friends or family members, they just looked at me like, "Yeah, you're even weirder than we thought." And then eventually I saw some like documentary on like the Discovery Channel, back when Discovery actually did things about science and nature,
Yes. Yeah, I know. Me too. You're
before
hearing
everything
about it
became
now.
about aliens and crop circles. So I saw this program. I think it was that. It might have been on PBS. And it's the same thing. I just saw them. They were interviewing people who were describing some of these phenomena that they experience. And my mouth just, I, again, the same thing. My jaw just dropped. And I was like, this guy is specifically addressing a phenomenon that I've been telling people since grade school. And I was just like, holy, this is weird. Is someone like looking at my journals or what? It was the strangest thing because I'd never met anyone who had shared that kind of experience or perception. And then now I hear it being described on some primetime TV show. And it was just so bizarre. It was like someone was in my head, like describing a particular image or experience or even a dream that you have, and here they are describing it. So I waited till the show replayed again, and I watched the whole thing, and I kind of took notes, like, what is it, synesthesia? And then a few years later, my sister, who is 7 years younger than me, so it's not the kind of conversation we would have had growing up, and she starts describing this phenomenon that she experiences, and I tell her, yes, and then you do this, and then does this happen, and then you see this. And she thought, Oh, my big brother's making fun of me. Where are you getting that from? I go, because I do that. She goes, you're just saying that to copy me. I go, no. And then I go, perhaps because we're both our parents' children. And she sent me a book. She's worked in libraries much of her life, and she had found a book about it. She sent it to me, and I go, and there was like this one chapter described a few chapters that described the phenomenon, something I did. So that was big. And there now was a name for this thing that I'd experienced.
How did it help you? How does it come to you? How does the music come to you and the sounds and
It's not as profound as some people experience. Like when I learned Natasha Schneider, who played,
yes, Alan's. Oh, I love Alan. Alan's a good friend, actually.
Alan Johannes and Natasha
Yeah.
Schneider. Yeah, I
He
got a
stayed here
text.
last year, actually. I should tell him that we spoke.
Yeah, I got a text from him yesterday. Natasha was telling me that when she heard music, she would actually see the notes as colors, like in front of her. That's a more profound synesthetic phenomenon that she experienced. I don't recall doing that or having that kind of experience at all. Maybe when I was a kid. Mine is more with like letters and numbers and sounds, words.
Oh, okay.
And that really
Not the
helped me
musical
when I was,
genius
it
part.
helped me growing up. I think it was beneficial. I was pretty good at math growing up as a kid, arithmetic at least. And I think part of that reason is being able to, like, each number had an assigned color and you can move them around. It's easier to remember where things were and stuff. And similarly with words and letters and names that you have an idea of certain colors that work well together and pair together. So song titles, lyrics, things like that. There are references to shapes and colors that I've always gotten from music. Now, I don't know if that's synesthesia. I haven't seen that phenomenon described in that book. That may be just a way that people create references either by through analogy or metaphor for the music that they have, because many musicians and producers will communicate aspects of, the audio in terms of visual references. And that isn't necessarily synesthesia. It's just trying to create a visual analog that people can understand. Like you refer to a song being angular or round, or thick or sharp or
Right,
bright or
right.
whatever.
The last time we spoke after Chris passed, it was right during COVID. You're having legal issues, with his ex and everything, getting the rights. You got the rights. So tell us about the new music. You were saying it might be coming. That was the last thing you told me. It might be coming, and
Yeah,
now we know it's coming.
what he's, we, it's new me.
Okay.
I would say new recordings or newly published.
Recordings,
Yeah,
right?
this material has been in existence for over 10 years in some cases. 14, 15 years. It was in various stages of writing, sharing, learning, recording. So, what we need to do is finish that process, and most of the writing had been complete. So it's mostly about recording. There were things that had been demoed by me, by Matt, by Chris, by Ben, but again, demoed. They're very rough. They're sketches. Just you start with a little pencil sketch and you fill it in and with whatever chalks or oils or pastels, and that's what we have to do is finish the sketches. And we're in that process.
That's so
It is
great.
atypical in the way we approach it. There isn't a record label budgeting time and money with a particular schedule. With everybody else's obligations, professionally or with family or whatever, we have to find the time and coordinate amongst ourselves to address the work. And it's being addressed, and
And it's coming.
it's.
I hope it's coming.
It's very, very important to all of us. It's
Yes.
important for the legacy of Soundgarden. It's important for the legacy of Chris Cornell. It is doing right by our collective work. It is doing right by our partner and friend.
What was he really like?
I don't know if we have enough time. What is
Yeah.
anyone really like? I think he's fairly straightforward and sincere. If you watch interviews with him, there's no reason for him to be anything other than and forthcoming and sincere about his feelings and attitudes about his work or whatever people talk about relationships.
Rock Hall, was that an honor?
Yeah, I think so. I think it was an honor. You know, if you had asked me 20 years ago, I would have gone, ah, whatever. But, you know, I'm older. I've learned how important it is to friends, family, and fans. And would they get excited about that recognition, about something they believe in, something that they have supported for years, something they've enjoyed, something that meant something to them? That is when my understanding changed and grew over the years. It was particularly addressed by Chris and Matt, who both experienced it, you know, before Soundgarden. Well, Chris had attended, I think he had inducted Heart, and he said, wow, it was there's a lot of enthusiasm from the fans directed towards their favorite artists who are being inducted. And he said he realized what a big deal it was. And he's heard that from Soundgarden fans. So he thought he conveyed that to me. And I regarded, you know, his insights and his experiences. And Matt said something similar when Pearl Jam went in. So all of that changed my understanding and regard for the Hall of Fame.
Is there anything in the book that you hesitated to include?
You know, when you're a kid and there's things that you share with family and friends, you want to make sure that you're not, you know, breaching the confidence with your friends. It's you're nothing. There's, you know, there's no kiss and tell. I mean, I think there's enough discretion, you know, on my part that when I talk about friends or partners or family members, we'll keep the salacious stuff, you know, between ourselves and any witnesses. I don't think I describe any juvenile crimes that I engage.
All right, so now, what's next for you? Are you going to be playing?
I'm going to be doing some more interviews and promoting this book and then popping into the studio to make my guitar sound a little bit better and get these
Yay.
songs as exciting for us as they can be.
Will you think you'll be getting together and playing again or touring or anything
Well,
like that?
we like playing and we like playing with the, you know, together. Matt and Ben and I like playing together, and we know that if we want to enjoy the songs that we've played for decades, that satisfaction of performing this material can only really happen with the three of us. It could only happen with the four of us, but since there's three of us remaining, then we know that that is that window of opportunity for us to share with each other material that we'd performed on and wrote on together. So
Do you have a favorite song, couple
yeah,
favorite?
that's always changing. You know, I might say something now, and it'll be something later in the evening. So.
I hear you. Oh, I love the Kiss story too. Oh my God, it was so funny. Do you ever talk to Gene Simmons now? Like, how could you say no to Gene Simmons?
I wouldn't have said no to Gene Simmons other than if it was an
Peer
individual.
pressure.
If he made a request of me, that'd be different. But the request was of the band, and there was four guys in the band that didn't see eye to eye on. We have a lot of shared references, you know, with the bands that inspired us, but there are places where it varies, you know.
Yeah, that's what made it
I
so good, I
was a
guess.
pretty big Kiss fan as a teenager.
I know. That was pure pressure. I can't believe
So was
it.
Matt, but
Then
the other
why
guy
did you
thought,
say no? Did you ever talk about it later? And
what? It's a collective decision because it's just Matt and I mean, there's other guys in the band that weren't interested, you know.
Aw. Kim, thank you so much.
Thank you,
Sorry.
Joanne.
To see more of this interview, visit our website, lifeminute.tv.